Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
We still have a very, very high embryo loss in creation of life in the laboratory. So I think it's very disingenuous to say that it was a pro-life approach to making babies.
And this is just madness to say. And each one of us, all 7 billion, all have these magical divine destinies from forever where we're all going to change the world. You know, that's what's destroying the world.
Another way to think about what I've called cliche theology is your rhetoric running your theology, or is the theology running the rhetoric?
Moms in labor, love issues, etc.
I think what people have suspected for a long time is being borne out in actual research. Now, granted, this research compiled together from women who've had negative experiences with abortion doesn't cover every woman who's had an abortion, but it does cover those who have come out of an abortion saying this was not worth it in some sense or another. And one of the most intriguing things that these women themselves, these women who have had abortions, are telling us is that it wasn't so much a matter of choice as it was either subtle or overt coercion. They were doing it to keep someone else happy, to keep someone else in their lives, or because everyone was telling them that they should, or maybe even had to do it. And if you look at Planned Parenthood's latest annual report, they're trying to avoid the fact that they do a bunch of abortions every year, upward of 300,000 a year. It's their business. We're going to be talking about both of those issues. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 11th of January. Alexander DeSantis of National Review Institute will be our guest to talk about that. And then Terry Mattingly joins us to discuss media coverage of LGBTQ issues. Alexander DeSantis joins us to talk about a new study on why women have abortions and Planned Parenthood's own annual report. She's National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism and author of two recent columns, The Pro-Choice Movement Cares More About Abortion Than Choice, and What Planned Parenthood's Annual Report Proves. Alexandra, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be with you.
According to this latest report from the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons on women's experience with abortion, the average woman who has an abortion, what's her story like?
Well, it's very different, first of all, from the experience we're often told about by the media and by the left, by Democratic politicians and the pro-abortion movement. You know, it's sort of painted as this kind of rosy thing where women go in and they come out more empowered and they're always completely happy with their decision and it's always freely a freely made decision and their life's always better off. But sadly, this is not always the case. And this latest survey shows that many women actually have very negative experiences. They feel a deep sense of loss after their abortion. They experience anxiety, depression, inability to sleep, guilt, remorse. All these things that are very rarely talked about. This survey does, it all comes from women who experience some kind of negative emotion after having an abortion. So it doesn't necessarily speak to statistics among all post-abortive women, but it does show that very many women actually do suffer immensely after making, even if this choice is freely made.
Speaking of the issue of choice, one of the things that I found not surprising, but certainly very depressing to read is that a vast majority of the women who had reported this negative experience reported that they had an abortion at least out of some kind of pressure from someone else. What's that about?
That's true. Almost 75% of the women in the survey said they were subject to at least subtle pressure from others. And even more troubling, over 58% of the women said they aborted their baby specifically in order to make others happy. And 30% of the women aborted out of fear of losing their partner if they did not choose abortion. And this is obviously very troubling, again, because so much of the rhetoric from the pro-choice movement is, well, this is always a free choice and women are empowered. And this is something they do because they want to and because they need to make their lives better in some way. And surely some women do believe that. And even if these women did freely choose it, clearly a lot of them, there's some kind of external pressure, the feeling of, you know, maybe they'll lose their family, maybe they'll lose their partner. And that obviously factors into their choice. And it's really not a fully free or autonomous decision at all.
Another one of the selling points, so to speak, that the abortion industry uses when it comes to women and abortion is that this is empowerment for the future, that without the burden of a child, one can go farther in their career, have more positive life experiences, and not be kind of chained down to a dependent. Does that prove true with all these women?
Clearly not. At least the women in this survey, what happened in the survey was they were asked the open-ended question of what positive experiences came out of having the abortion and what negative experiences came out of it. And the negative ones were things I already spoke to, you know, the feeling of loss, the feeling of guilt, things like this. But in the survey as a whole, these nearly 1,000 women, and I'll quote directly from the survey here, they generally did not speak of empowerment, the ability to control their reproductive destinies, liberation from abusive partners, or the need for abortion in order to be competitive in the workplace. So to the extent that these women did experience a positive outcome, they generally cited things like, you know, realizing that the pro-life movement is actually very valuable, working with women who were considering abortion or who had had an abortion and were similarly feeling regretful, or deepening their spiritual life as a result of having had an abortion. But they very rarely cited these things that are platforms of the pro-choice movement. So I think that's another red flag. Obviously, some women do feel empowered afterwards. This is not to say that no women do, but there are all these women out there who really don't. And that's, again, never talked about.
Has the abortion industry or its supporters, and here we're talking about largely kind of political supporters of the abortion industry, have they acknowledged the issue of coercion in a woman's decision to have abortion?
You know, to be honest with you, I obviously can't speak for all of these places, but I do a lot of writing and reporting on this topic, and I spend a lot of time paying attention to these pro-abortion lobbying groups, and I can't think of a single instance, and I've never found in my research a single instance of any pro-choice group talking about this issue. And to my mind, you know, they talk about all sorts of things. They talk about how the economy affects women's reproductive futures, and they talk about apparently how the issue of net neutrality and the tax bill and, you know, this, that, and the other all affect abortion and reproductive justice, or so they say, but I never see anything about coercion. And to my mind, you know, if you're going to talk about being pro-choice, you have to also talk about the choice for life. And if a woman wants to make that choice to keep her baby, isn't that something a truly pro-choice movement would also care about? And yet I never, ever see anything like that from, you know, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, or even pro-abortion Democratic politicians. I never see that kind of rhetoric.
On the contrary, you note in your National Review article, there's kind of a, what shall we call it, overcompensation on the other side.
Very much so. There's this kind of theme, at least on the very radically pro-abortion left, of we have to celebrate abortion. And if you're a woman who had an abortion, you're supposed to, you know, hashtag shout your abortion. You're supposed to talk about it with no sense of regret. There's, we have to eliminate the stigma by celebrating, cheering for women when they have an abortion. And I think that's, you know, intensely harmful. Perhaps some people are well-intentioned and they think they're helping women sort of shed the guilt and, you know, move past the shaming of the religious right or something like that. But so many women do authentically feel very regretful, very sad after these abortions for reasons that have nothing to do with being shamed. It has very much to do with losing a real child. And for those women to be told by the left that they should be celebrating and they're betraying the progressive movement if they don't is obviously very hurtful to them.
In this survey that tracked the negative experiences of women with abortion, did the women who respond, did they buy into a lot of the arguments for abortion, that the baby is not a human being or a real baby, that it's a clump of cells? Any of those kind of old boilerplate arguments on the part of choice?
No. In fact, very many of them said that at the time of the abortion, they did believe that the fetus was a human being. And 66%, I believe, said they knew they were making a mistake at the time that they underwent the abortion. And I think this kind of speaks to the fact that many women make this decision perhaps freely, even if they're not being coerced into it in any way. They make it freely, but it's a very difficult decision. And rarely is it straightforward or unambiguous. It's very complicated. And so to sort of dismiss it as a, you know, easy breezy decision that we can all just kind of roll out of the abortion clinic and move on and never think about it again, I think is pretty absurd.
So what does, as far as you can tell, Alexandra, what does choice mean in the pro-choice movement?
You know, to be very honest, it seems to me, at least from all the evidence I've seen, and this is speaking about the very hardcore pro-choice left, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, some very intense, radical pro-abortion politicians, it's not about choice per se or choice as such. It's about the choice for abortion, and that's a choice that they will protect to their dying breath. But say you're a woman who wants to choose life, or you're a woman who hasn't had an abortion or isn't thinking about abortion but chooses to be pro-life, those are not acceptable choices. And to me, that's describing a pro-abortion movement, not a pro-choice movement.
Alexandra DeSantis is our guest, National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism and author of two columns, The Pro-Choice Movement Cares More About Abortion Than Choice, and one we'll turn to on the other side of the break, What Planned Parenthood's Annual Report Proves. Stay tuned.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Oh, morning star, of morning star,
listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Returning to the subject of Planned Parenthood's annual report, Alexandra DeSantis is our guest, National Review Institute's William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism. Alexandra, what have we learned about Planned Parenthood recently based on their own annual report?
Well, Planned Parenthood very recently released their annual report for 2016-2017. And I would say the biggest highlight from it is that the number of abortions they performed over the last fiscal year did go down from the previous year. But here's the catch, went down to 321,000. So that's pretty remarkable. If you're going down to that huge number, that means they provide over one third of all the abortions that take place in the United States annually. So that's a fairly shocking figure.
They claim that abortion is a very small part of what they do. How do we sort that out in their own reporting?
You know, this 3% statistic, we hear this very frequently in the media from politicians and from Planned Parenthood claiming that abortion is just 3% of what they do. But this is actually a stat that has been debunked many times by even, you know, mainstream and left-leaning sources. And basically what Planned Parenthood does to get this number is they calculate the number of services rather than the number of clients they see. So if one woman comes in and, you know, gets birth control, she gets an STD test, she gets a cancer screening, she gets an abortion, and she has, you know, a counseling session. That's five services right there. And so they would say, well, abortion is just 20% of what that woman received. And then they apply that to the whole year and get the 3% statistic. Abortion is just 3% of their services. But in reality, that was one woman and one abortion. So that would be a much more accurate representation of what they do if they were to divide by the number of clients.
Is abortion their moneymaker?
Oh, very much so. It's the most expensive procedure that Planned Parenthood offers, and it's also, you know, one of the most frequent procedures that they offer. If you look at the adoption referrals and the prenatal services that they offer, they're basically negligible. For the last year, I think they performed under 4,000 adoption referrals, and that's about 83 abortions for every one adoption referral. So clearly, this is a very abortion-centric corporation.
What about the objection that if Planned Parenthood didn't exist, there would be millions of American women who would have no health care? How do you respond to that?
This is a very, very common claim. But in reality, if you look at just a basic map, which is fairly easy to find, of Planned Parenthood clinics, you'll see that there's absolutely no way these clinics could be meeting the needs of millions of American women. So Planned Parenthood claims to see 2.4 unique clients each year. But their number of clinics is going down. So in this past year, they closed 32 clinics, and they now have 597 across the country, and that's according to reporting from the American Life League. They do an annual survey of Planned Parenthood clinics. So there are under 600 clinics in the United States. Meanwhile, there are over 13,000 federally qualified healthcare centers, which offer a vast array of actual healthcare services. They don't perform abortions, and they offer, you know, all kinds of things that Planned Parenthood doesn't at all. Planned Parenthood focuses almost entirely on reproductive healthcare. So Planned Parenthood would like us to believe that somehow under 600 clinics are providing care to millions of women who otherwise wouldn't be able to find care when there are over 13,000 places that are available to them. It's just impossible to parse that.
What I'm seeing in my mind is the comparison of under 600 clinics nationwide and now $500 million of federal money. That seems completely out of proportion.
It really is, and that the claim on federal funding from Planned Parenthood is that they're so valuable and they offer all these kinds of health care and they're all over the place helping millions of women, but in reality, that's clearly not the case. They offer very little health care aside from abortion. You know, their other big services are giving out contraception and offering STD tests. It's not really important whether or not those are valuable services. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but clearly these are available elsewhere and much more accessible places all across the country. And Republicans would like to take $500 million from Planned Parenthood, which provides an obscene number of abortions, and direct that funding towards these federally qualified healthcare centers that really do help millions of women.
What about the argument that Planned Parenthood not only needs but also deserves that kind of government funding?
Again, that's very common. And I think that's one thing that was very interesting to me, too, in this annual report, which you can find on Planned Parenthood's own website. But it's very clear that they are just rolling in money. Their net assets at the end of their last fiscal year were up over $1.6 billion, which is up from $1.5 billion the previous year. And the group pays out in management salaries $174 million each year. They operate a PAC, which is one of the most powerful lobbying groups. And they spent, you know, another couple hundred million in political money, political organizing, things like this. So if this is the kind of money that they're raking in for performing abortions and paying out management salaries, I don't think they can really expect to also be taking in $500 million from the government every year.
Why don't we hear these numbers, these kind of raw numbers, that the amount of money that they are pulling in, the amount of money they're sitting on, the amount of money that they distribute to political races and to, as you point out, some rather nebulous categories of money that goes out? Why don't we hear about this?
No, I think that's a fairly complicated question, but a huge part of it is that so much of the media is very complicit in this agenda, this pro-abortion agenda, and they don't want to talk about it. It's not, you know, if you Google Planned Parenthood annual report, I'm willing to bet that, you know, my article and a few other right-leaning news sites are the only place you'll find anything about it. You don't see the New York Times or CNN or, you know, see any cable news stations doing segments on the Planned Parenthood annual report, because we all like to think that Planned Parenthood is a, you know, your friendly neighborhood healthcare provider, and that's their marketing team has been able to spin that very successfully. And so to the extent that the media is buying into that rhetoric, puts everybody else in the dark.
Do you think that their recent potential legal troubles over the sale of baby body parts and all their partners that they had in that their kind of
over-the-top rhetoric, the shout your abortion kind of thing. Do you think that's any indication of maybe the sun setting on an organization like Planned Parenthood anytime soon?
You know, I am very hopeful, and I think when those undercover videos came out about the fetal tissue trafficking, that was definitely a breaking point, and a lot of Americans looked at those videos and were just in shock because they've, again, bought into the Planned Parenthood rhetoric, and I know of many people who were pro-choice and saw those and said, look, I think a woman's right to choose is important, but if this is what Planned Parenthood really does, if this is what abortion providers do, I don't really want any part of that. So I think if the media will get that information out there, and you know, the Department of Justice is currently investigating Planned Parenthood further, and if more comes out of that that's incriminating and it's covered more publicly than it has been in the past, I'm hopeful that it could change some more hearts and minds and hopefully at least get the government to defund Planned Parenthood, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Should another piece of information be available readily to the public and reported on, and that is, who's taking Planned Parenthood's money?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And there are clearly a number of politicians on the left who received plenty of money from Planned Parenthood. You know, the PAC spent $40 million last year on public policy, and they also list these categories. I think you mentioned earlier, movement building, engaging communities. I'm sure all this is code words for spending in local races, things like that. And I think it definitely matters, because if you're getting money from, you know, Planned Parenthood Action to run for re-election, then surely you're not going to vote to defund Planned Parenthood. You're not going to vote for any kind of pro-life restrictions at the federal level. And that definitely matters. And of course, there's money, all kinds of money in politics that influence politicians one way or another. But the idea that Planned Parenthood is taking government money with one hand and then spending more money to influence the government to give it more money is also fairly absurd.
Finally, then, from these two that we've talked about, first of all, the study on why women have abortions among those women who've had negative experiences with abortion, and Planned Parenthood's own reporting, what kind of picture of the abortion industry and, in many cases, its very reluctant customers emerges for you?
I think it's very clear to me, at least, that women don't want abortion. That's very rarely a choice made completely freely, very rarely a choice made joyfully or with a sense of empowerment. And on top of that, women don't need abortion. Women need to be told that they can have their child, that life is possible, and that they will be supported in that choice. Planned Parenthood doesn't tell women that. Planned Parenthood tells women that abortion is an easy way out, and that's not what women need. It's certainly not what mothers want, I don't think.
Alexandra DeSantis is National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, author of two recent columns, The Pro-Choice Movement Cares More About Abortion Than Choice, and What Planned Parenthood's Annual Report Proves. You can read both of these at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Alexandra, thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Todd.
Terry Mattingly is with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about media coverage of LGBTQ issues, beginning with a website that keeps track of what churches think about the LGBTQ activists.
In just a few short years, digital technology has revolutionized the way we live, work, and interact. But what does this mean for the church? In its January issue, the Lutheran Witness magazine looks at digital technology through Lutheran eyes, examining social media, online evangelism, podcasting, and the spiritual implications of these technological innovations for Christians. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
This book is all about how to help recover piety in the house.
Pastor Will Wheaton, talking about his new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety.
What do you do when people have confused a legalistic pietism for any form of Christian piety? And by piety, I just mean godly habits.
Learn more about Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey at issuesetc.org.
At Zion Lutheran Church, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, we've adopted the motto, A Changeless Christ for a Changing World. While many congregations try to market a message that appeals to what a changing world wants, we continue to give a constantly changing world what it needs. A changeless Christ in word and sacraments like the church has done for 2,000 years. If you're in Chippewa Falls and would like to have the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, and salvation that Jesus won on the cross and delivers today in his church, please join us poor, miserable sinners. For more information, visit cfzionlutheran.com.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.